From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Halloween may be over, but strange hauntings continue. Ann Wilder joins us. Here's what's happening. The U.S. House approves a concealed firearm permit bill. A state permit to carry a concealed firearm would be valid in almost every state in the country under legislation that the House has just passed. Under the House legislation, people with a concealed carry permit in one state could carry a concealed weapon in every other state that gives people the right to carry concealed weapons. While states have various standards for issuing permits, currently only Illinois and the District of Columbia prohibit the concealed carrying of weapons. Coast to Coast guest, economist, and trends forecaster Gerald Celente has become the newest victim of the MF global bankruptcy problem when his global futures account was taken by the trustees, and then he was hit with a margin call within days of the corporate shutdown. Gerald Celente on the line with us here. Gerald, this is one of the strangest stories I've ever seen. First of all, are you okay?
Well, I've lost, you know, they're holding a lot of my money. I work really hard. And what I do, George, is I buy futures in the sense that I had an agreement to take a future, to take delivery on December futures of gold. It's a contract. And they've just taken my money out of my account, and that's the end of the story. You can't get anywhere. This was the, you know, the John Corzine heist and the CME group, crime family heist. The CME group's the one that runs the commodities exchange, one of the largest in the world. And what I've been warning, George, people over and over again is that your money's not safe anywhere. You know, this wasn't speculation. This was an agreement to take delivery of gold. And my belief is there's no gold out there. And that's what they're doing to people.
That's right.
And I'm warning everybody. I don't care if your money's with Infidelity, with Raymond James, with Charles Schwab, with Bank of America, with anybody. The whole global financial system is collapsing. This is historic, what's just happened with the commodities exchanges in Chicago. This has never happened before in the history of it. They're just taking the people's money, and you get shafted.
How much, can I ask you? I don't want to get too personal.
Six figures. My hard work over a lot of years.
Is there any chance of you getting it back, Gerald?
I don't know. They're not telling us anything. And again, this is unprecedented. These are segregated funds, George. This is like somebody going into your savings account
and just taking it.
And taking your money and gambling with it, because that's what Corzine did. You know that guy, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who they did a perp walk with for having sex with allegedly with one maid?
Yep.
Well, this guy, Corzine, screws thousands of people. And he holds the $35,000 a plate dinner for Obama. There is no justice for the white shoe boys.
I want you to keep in touch with us, Gerald. This is an incredible story. Losing six figures of gold futures that he bought. He didn't take possession. There was no physical gold here. And he thinks it's all gone. All smoking in cars should be banned across the United Kingdom. Might happen here, too. To protect people from secondhand smoke, according to doctors. The British Medical Association called for the extension of the current ban on smoking in public places after reviewing evidence of the dangers. It highlighted research showing the levels of toxins in a car that can be up to 23 times higher than in a smoky bar. Your blood type might affect your risk for stroke. People with AB and women with B were a little more likely to suffer one than people with O blood, which is the most common, according to a study. Well, as Richard C. Hoagland reported last night and said years ago and confirmed today, scientists have found the best evidence yet for water beneath the surface of Jupiter's icy moon Europa. Analysis of the moon's surface suggesting plumes of warmer water well up beneath its icy shell, melting and fracturing the outer layers. The results predict that small lakes exist only 3 kilometers below the crust. Any liquid water could represent a potential habitat for life. Here's Richard C. Hoagland our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. Take a bow. You deserve it.
Well, it's 32 years in coming. You know what? This is really exciting is that there really now is a major chance for life, and I'm talking big life, in the oceans of Europa. The fact that they have spotted these surface structures, and with structures I mean geological jumble ice structures indicating melting just beneath the surface, indicates two things. One is when we land something on Europa, getting to this water and sampling it for life will be a lot simpler technologically than has been here for, projected or imagined.
That's right.
And two, it's a lot easier to get critical oxygen down into that water to support big life. The ecosystem on Europa would be absolutely alien and unique. What is it on Earth that produces the oxygen levels in the oceans of the Earth, George?
What is the plankton?
Photosynthesis, plankton, yes. Well, if you got an ice cover, think of it as a kind of a dome stadium. How does sunlight get through?
That's a good point.
So there could not be plankton or anything, photosynthetic going on in the ocean, so they should be cold and dark and sterile, right?
Yes, should.
Well, there's another source. Europa orbits Jupiter in the most incredible magnetosphere in the solar system. The ices on the surface are bombarded by incredible amounts of radiation, which split the ice, which is H2O in frozen form, into hydrogen and oxygen. And the oxygen eventually is pulled down with the ice in a side of a slow-motion lava lamp convection thingy. So the oxygen goes from the surface of the ice down to the ocean, producing, according to Richard Greenberg at the University of Arizona, more oxygen per gallon than there is in all the oceans of the Earth. So there's no limit, oxygen-wise, to the size and complexity of biology on Europa in those oceans. And now it means that these little lakes underneath, I mean, little is comparatively speaking, we're talking the size of the Great Lakes here.
Yeah.
They could produce fingers extending up toward that oxygen, producing a faster turnover, higher oxygen rates, more organisms. And we haven't even talked about Europa living in the huge spin field of Jupiter, which, of course, would increase the background hyperdimensional torsion physics effect that leads to huge organisms, ergo the dinosaurs, and that's a whole other show. So this is really amazing news.
What is keeping the water warm, Richard?
The tides of Jupiter. Jupiter exerts tidal forces on objects that move around it in not perfect circles. And both Io and Europa and Ganymede and Callisto, the four big moons of Jupiter, have slightly egg-shaped orbits, which means when they come closer to or farther away by a few thousand miles, Jupiter, the tidal variance produces squeezing motions, which produces high temperatures, lavas, volcanoes under the ice. You've got everything there for an undersea ecosystem like we have here, including, because of this weird radiation oxygen production mechanism a la Greenberg, a beneficent amount of oxygen in that seawater. So there could be anything living in the oceans, and that's going to be the stunning surprise when we finally get a spacecraft there.
Super. Thanks. Richard C. Hoagland predicted this 30 years ago, didn't have all the equipment that NASA has at its disposal today, and he was right. Up next, the inflation deception. Get ready for a story that you will not forget. Craig Smith, our guest, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. If you work, spend money, breathe air. This night is going to be very fascinating for you. Craig Smith with us for a couple hours, author of The Inflation Deception. He's an expert in all kinds of tangible assets, often sought after by the media for his insights on breaking stories and world events and the financial trends over the past two decades. Mr. Smith has been interviewed on more than 1,500 media programs. He also writes a weekly editorial for World Net Daily. Welcome back to Coast, Craig Smith. Craig, how are you?
Hey, George, I'm terrific. It's great to be back with you. It's been, I think, 6 years, a little too long.
Coming up on six. Well, a little more than six. You're absolutely right. Hey, you heard Gerald Celente. He's lost a lot of money. What the heck happened?
Isn't that amazing, George? I was telling Tom before the program that I have a client who lives back in the East Coast. To make a long story short, he bought $1 million worth of gold on margin, just like Gerald, that was going to take delivery in the future. His account was over $1.1 million with the money he put up to sustain the position.
Oh.
The other day he got his statement, George, he's worth $34,000.
He's got to be sick, Craig.
Oh, it's unbelievable, George. And this is the crazy part about it. Like Gerald said, they can't get any information out of it. It's like, you guys have my money. At least tell me, is it going to be 6 months or a year? Am I going to get 50 cents on a dollar, 10 cents on a dollar? We had another client that had the same thing, and she called us up panicked. 3 days later, she got a check from MF Global. She said, I'm so relieved. We found out today the check bounced.
Oh.
So it's clearly, I personally believe, and it's speculation on my behalf, George, but I think that you're going to find that there was fraud there. And I think Mr. Corzine does owe the investors an explanation and the public. And I hope that if it needs to be, that Congress investigates it, because something was really radical.
Something is wrong. Now, explain to us, Craig, for a moment, you know, the futures market. So what Gerald did was, He took this six figures, let's call it $1 million, and he buys futures in gold, which what, leverages him up? He's owning what?
Yeah, I'd have to know a little bit more about exactly what Gerald did, but traditionally, let's say you want to buy $100,000 worth of gold that you're going to take delivery of, say, December of 2013.
Okay.
Okay. So you would put down, and I'm just using hypothetical.
Sure, understand. Numbers.
You'd put $10,000 down to secure the position, and then if the market started going up, you wouldn't have to give them any more because that secures your position, and then 2013, you'd pay them the other $90,000 and take possession. If the market deteriorated today, let's say it started dropping in value, you'd have to add a little bit to that $10,000. You have to increase your margin. But down the road in 2013, you would take delivery. So Gerald has a contract that says if he pays the other portion of his position, he's entitled to take his contract or take delivery. Or he can sell that position out and take whatever profit or loss he has. And that's the thing that is so absolutely aggravating. Gerald was hit with a margin call. He can't get to his money, but they want more money from him to secure his position.
And they've taken the money. Yeah, that's crazy. And they didn't take the money that he had in there for the margin call. That's something else, right?
Exactly. And that's going to be the $64,000 question, George. What happened with all that money that people put down to secure their positions? Did the house gamble it? Did they take on risky positions? Did they do very similar things to what the banks did? And look, Sarbanes-Oxley, the legislation, which I'm not a big fan of, was passed for situations just like this. The CEO of that company, Mr. Corzine, who used to be the Democratic governor of New Jersey, has to be accountable for this. He's on the hook. Somebody has to, as Gerald said, be perp walked on this.
Yeah.
And this is the problem I think we had in 2008, George. We should have let banks fail. And if there was misdeeds and if there was illegal activities, they should have been arrested. And currently, our Justice Department is taking no action against the bankers. Therefore, the average person assumes there wasn't any law broken. Well, I'm not saying there was or there wasn't, but there clearly should be an investigation because a lot of people got hurt.
Like Bernie Madoff, he, of course, ran off with a lot of money and lined his own pockets. In these situations, you know, with Gerald's money, I mean, where did it go?
Well, of course, I have a call for speculation on my behalf, George, because I don't have a copy of their books to examine tonight. But it could have been a rogue trader that placed a bad trade and lost a lot of money.
What if they never even made the trade?
Well, and that's the big question. You know, did it go to corporate executive bonuses?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows about. I mean, we won't know till there's forensics done on the accountant's books. But I got to tell you, George,
yeah.
This Gerald said something that should wake every American up. And I thought about it, and George, I'm sure you thought about it when you heard Gerald. Let's say I get a statement from XYZ Business, because I don't want to name any particular business.
I understand.
And my account says I have $100,000 in it. And all I have is a piece of paper that says that.
That's it. That's right. And you think that's what I have.
Sure. And so you go to bed and you rest comfortably and you get up the next day and you call up. You say, you know, I think I'm going to have them send me $10,000 because maybe I'd like to buy a new car.
Yeah.
And you call them up and they say, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Norrie, your account only has 15,000. I said, what are you talking about? I have a statement that says 100.
Oh,
well,
no.
We've had some problems and we'll get back to you.
Click. Yeah.
That can happen with anybody,
oh,
George.
My gosh. That's frightening. And it could happen, Craig, more and more as we get into this mess. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg here.
George, I think you're absolutely correct. And look, you know Gerald. He's a very wise man.
He's astute.
I mean, this is not somebody that doesn't know what he's doing. And if somebody like Gerald Celente, with his background, can be victimized by a system like this, it can happen to anybody. And that's the part that troubles me about it. And you're right, George. This is the tip of the iceberg because I'm convinced, and I hate to be a bearer of bad news tonight because I'm a generally positive person, but we're getting ready to go, in my opinion, somewhere between a 10 and 30-year period of very difficult times in America as we squeeze the excesses of the last 100 years of growth, specifically the last 40 years, that have come with massive increases of personal, government, and sovereign debt, not only here in America, but throughout the world. And we're starting to see it come home to roost in Europe. Soon we'll see it come home to roost in America. It was very predictable. We've talked about it in the inflation deception. The American people have been deceived to believe that we can create money out of thin air and there'll never be a day of reckoning. Well, that day of reckoning has come, George. It started in 2007. We glossed it over with a lot of paper, $4.4 trillion. Nothing is better. I would argue things are worse today than they were in September of 2008 when Lehman Brothers collapsed. And as you just said, we've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, see, I think, Craig, there are more secrets out there. I think Fannie, Freddie, they're in trouble. The banks are probably in deeper trouble than we are led to believe. There's something strange out there. And you just said something very interesting, that this could be a very long haul and it could be very tough for a lot of people. We are seeing, just with the Occupy Wall Street folks and the unrest and the unhappiness out there, if this gets really bad, and I mean really bad, how is government going to hold the lid down on people and keep them from going ballistic?
I'm not sure that they can, George, and that's the problem. You know, I've been listening to Coast to Coast for years. I'm a late night person, and I get up super early, believe it or not. But I've always listened, and you know, we've heard about unrest and unrule and this and that, and we've said no, it can't happen in America, but it can because we're a different people. Like you, George, is why I'm attracted to the program. You're kind to people. You're nice. You're a decent man. Matter of fact, you and I have a common friend in Pat Boone, who's one of the nicest men I've ever met.
And he wrote the foreword for your book we're going to be talking about.
Indeed. But men like you are the exception to the rule now, George. We live in a very tough, very angry, very rude society. We see it all around us right now. And that's why I think if trouble breaks out, it's going to be very, very difficult for the government to keep a lid on it. Therefore, they will go to the only thing they know to do, and that's print money. Because would you rather have no job and a gallon of gasoline be $2 a gallon, or have a job and gasoline be $6 a gallon?
That's right.
Most people would opt for the $6 gallon and have a job.
And have a job and try to get by. And they might say, well, I just won't drive as much, but at least I'm working.
Exactly right. And as we go through the night, we're going to look at statistics. We have way more than 9.1% unemployment, George. You and I both know that. Okay, our government has made incredible mistakes. And now we have the super committee meeting. And they say they're going to cut spending by $1.2 trillion. George, do you know, using their math, we are still going to amass, on top of the $15 trillion that we just crested tonight, by the way, we will add another $11 trillion worth of debt over the next 10 years, putting us at $26 trillion worth of government debt, not counting the $70 trillion of unfunded mandates. The numbers are too big now, George. The math doesn't work. We can't grow our way out of this. We either default or we print. And I think printing it shall be, and that's why we outlined it in Crashing the Dollar, our first book, and Inflation Deception. We wrote a white paper for Congress entitled The Uses of Inflation, where we outline we will print our way out of this. It's not the first time it's ever happened. There's other nations that have done so. And the ramifications are it wipes out the middle class. And that's what breaks my heart, George, because most of the people listening to this program are hardworking, good, decent people. They play by the rules. They pay their taxes. And our government is going to allow a printing scheme that will steal from every one of those people in a way that not one person in a million will realize has happened till after it's already occurred.
Greg, when we come back, let's also get into the inflation deception and how people can react to this and at least protect themselves as much as they can. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, are you into technology? Do you like gizmos, gadgets, playing around with your computer? Well, if you do and you're pretty savvy at that, you can be a Coast Insider and join and become a member of the club. But here's the great part about it. You don't have to be technically informed. All you got to do is know how to use a computer, and there you are. You can podcast, download, and just be a member of the club that is growing by leaps and bounds. As a matter of fact, we're looking for 2,000 new members for the month of November, and the month of November is halfway gone. So just jump on board, go to coasttocoastam.com, and for less than 25 cents a day, you can be a Coast Insider. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're with Craig Smith, his book, The Inflation Deception. He wrote it with Lowell Ponte, forward by our friend Pat Boone. I want to give some folks hope too, Craig, as we get into this. This is not the end of the world for everybody, right?
No, I don't think it'll be the end of the world for anybody or everybody. I mean, no, I don't think it's the end of the world. I mean, keep in mind, George, we've had currency crises before. We had one in 1921. It was called Weimar Germany. You remember the story?
I remember the story.
Barrels full of money.
I wasn't there, but I remember the story.
But we had a currency crisis in 1971 when Richard Nixon changed the whole money path around in America. But we will get through this, and I would argue that a collapse would be good for us, George. Now, people say, are you crazy? No, it's how the government, or it's how our economy works. And just for a
metaphor. It might be healthy if that happens.
Exactly. Let me just give you a metaphor, George.
Okay, sure.
Imagine your lungs. If you breathe in, you're expanding your lungs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to be healthy, you breathe out.
That's right.
You breathe in, you breathe out. Our economy is much like that. Imagine a set of lungs. You breathe in, it expands, and then it contracts, and then it expands, and then it contracts. Well, every time we've gone through a contraction, which is very healthy, because bad businesses that are not competing go out of business, people that can't afford to buy things have to return them to the bank, etc., our Federal Reserve reacted by continuing to pump more money in. So we keep pumping and pumping and pumping, and guess what? Those lungs finally explode. If we want a healthy economy, we have to realize that the Federal Reserve cannot smooth out the highs and the lows of economies. We're going to have good times. We're going to have bad times. Think about it. The 1890s, they were referred to as the gay 90s, right?
That's right.
And they were followed by the almost depression of 1907. Then we went through the roaring 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big cars, speakeasies, you know, the big fur coat.
Fun time.
Right. That was followed by the Great Depression. Then we had the fabulous 50s. Homes were being built. The GIs were coming home. Everybody was buying a new Chevrolet.
And I was born.
Yeah, Milton Berle and the Texaco Hour. I mean, you know, I was born in the 50s myself. I'm a child of the 50s. That was followed by the recessions of the early 70s when Mr. Nixon put in wage and price controls and showed us very clearly that every time the government intervenes, they mess things up. George, I'm convinced the government could mess up a one-piece puzzle.
I think you're right. You are absolutely right.
And if the government had just stayed on the sidelines in 2008, and we heard all this talk, if we don't do it, the economy will go over the cliff. George, let me remind your listeners that during that whole crisis, we went to pass the TARP. The first week it didn't pass. And we were told, well, if we don't get it this weekend, the markets won't open up on Monday. Monday came, and we didn't pass it the second week. And then we were told, this weekend for sure, we'll collapse, London will fall apart, and the next week, it didn't fall apart.
Yeah,
and yes, the market was suffering, but it was only after we added $85 billion worth of pork barrel spending that those stinkers in Washington, D.C. get the TARP through. We didn't need the TARP, George. We should have let bad banks go out of business. They would have been picked up by stronger banks.
Mm-hmm.
We should have let General Motors go down. It would have been, see, this is what most people don't understand.
Ford would have picked up the slack, or somebody
exactly.
would have.
And Georgia's like our postal service. We're being told now they need another $5 billion to keep going. I mean, the government can't take out the trash effectively. But let's just say we didn't bail them out. What would happen? Federal Express would jump in, UPS would jump in, the private sector would jump in, and they will deliver the mail more effectively, probably for less money, because we won't be bogged down with government pensions and all the other bureaucracy that comes when government runs something.
And, you know, and if they were smart, they would go to the government, even though they say the postal service is private. They would go to the government and make a 10 cents on the dollar purchase and buy that business. What do you think? And then turn it around.
Exactly, George. You have the infrastructure in place. And that's why I argue in the book, Lowell and I argue in the book, that the government has actually made things worse. George, there's currently $3 trillion on corporate balance sheets waiting to go into the economy right now. We refer to it as Atlas is shrugging because the productive people don't want to get involved. Why? Because they've seen how government intervention increases regulations, potentially increases taxes, and clearly has inflation on its way back, because once that $4.4 trillion they printed to get us out of the mess in 2008 starts gaining velocity in our system, we are going to have inflation. And that's why I truly believe, George, we entered into a depression in 2007. I refer to it as the Invisible Depression, and that we're not going to get out of it for another 10, 15 years.
How troublesome is it if we go into inflation in a climate where people don't have a lot of money to spend anyway?
Well, I don't think we have much choice now, George, because look at the depression we're in. People say, no, we're not in a depression. Nonsense. Let's look at it. In the Great Depression, you had men standing in line at the factories looking for work every day. We don't have that nowadays because we send people 99 weeks of unemployment to their homes so they don't have to stand in the lines at the factory.
Well, there are no factories to stand in line in front of anymore.
Sure, but I'm using it metaphorically, obviously, because you're right. We don't have the manufacturing jobs anymore.
Yeah.
But then look at, we used to have soup lines and food kitchens, right? And people stay in line to get fed. Now we send people food stamps. We have now 49 million Americans taking food stamps. During the Great Depression, you got 30 days, and they kicked you out of your house, put your couch on the front yard. You had to get a pickup truck and haul your stuff away. Now the banks allow you to live in your house without making a mortgage payment for 24 months. We have an invisible depression. We've papered it over with trillions of dollars of money, and now it's starting to catch up, George. And look, I'm not happy to bring this news to your listeners, but the government knows it. The charade that we saw on raising the debt ceiling was just that, George. We have been raising the debt in America every year since 1960.
Dramatically.
And nothing's going to reverse that, George.
No.
Unless we go through a crisis. And our government, because the politicians always look for what's most politically expedient for their future, they will print their way out of this mess because it's the only thing that makes sense politically.
But you don't see this happening before the 2012 election.
No, I don't.
No.
And I think that we've bought enough time that probably we will start to see the definition of hyperinflation is whenever you have a 30-day calendar period where prices go up more than 50%. I don't think we're going to see that, but I think we're going to easily see what currently we know is the inflation rate, 10%, even though the government tells us 3%, somewhere between 10 and 25% of your inflation. And what that's going to do initially is bring down unemployment. We saw this happen in Weimar Germany. People have to remember the first couple of years of Weimar Germany were very good for Germany. They were bustling, very low unemployment.
That's right.
There was tons of money. Happy days were here again. During that same period, France and England entered into austerity after the First World War, and they had massive unemployment, and their governments were shrinking. But then that money in Germany caught up with them, and they had hyperinflation. We should have entered into austerity, George, in 2008. And guess what? The American people did. Do you know from 2008 till today, the American people have reduced their personal debt by $569 billion and their net worth by $12 trillion. During that same time period, our federal government has increased our debt by $4 trillion. So as the people get poorer, The government is getting larger. The government is taking more of our money, and the math doesn't work anymore. George, you know as well as I do. If you're making $500 a week and you're spending $600 a week,
it's not going to work. Yeah.
It just doesn't work. Now, you can get by for a while. You borrow from your friends. You borrow on your credit cards. But once people stop lending you money, you're in trouble. We already saw the beginning of this. A lot of the foreign countries, everybody says, well, they're still buying the Treasury bills. No, they're not. Our Federal Reserve is now buying U.S. paper.
More so than China, right?
Absolutely. They're now a bigger holder of U.S. debt than China. They just, you did your homework, George. That's what I love about you. You're always on your game. We just exceeded China, or the Federal Reserve just exceeded China as the largest holder of American paper. So if we have the government out there, or the Federal Reserve buying the government paper, do we really have people lending us money? No, we're taking it from our right pocket
and putting it into
our left pocket. And who is on the hook for it? See, we got to remember this. We, the people, to form a more perfect union. That's why every single person listening to this program tonight is $144,000 in debt, because if you take the money that we owe and you divide it by the 307 million people that live here, we're all responsible for that debt. Even though we didn't spend it, even though we didn't get the benefit of it, we're on the hook for it. George, kind of like having teenagers, isn't it?
What would happen, Craig, that instead of divvying up all that TARP money, if they had given, let's say, every taxpayer $100,000 voucher to buy goods in the United States, would that have helped anything?
Well, it would have been like a drug, George. It would have made you feel good initially, but no, it wouldn't have been good long term, because whenever you create more money, unless you subsequently create the same amount of goods and services or production, you're ultimately going to have inflation. So would it have helped initially? Yes. But you can't spend money you don't have. It's kind of like Atlas Shrugged, remember? A man cannot consume more than he produces.
That's true.
So unless you were out producing something that would get you that $100,000, it's just a sugar high, George. And that's why everything the government has done, look, we've heard the stories, you know, the $600 million that went to create, you know, 12 jobs or whatever it was that cost $6 million a piece, or the ridiculous numbers that they quoted. Those programs sound good, they look good, they feel good, they generally pay somebody off in the political arena, and they come back to gain votes, but they don't fix economies. And one thing I want to leave your listeners with tonight, anything that's good economically is bad politically, and anything that's good politically is traditionally bad economically, because we don't want to be told the truth. What did Ronald Reagan do? He came into this country after the malaise of the Carter years, right? We had what was called the misery index.
Yep, perfect timing. I think inflation under Carter, 24% interest rates? Yeah.
And what did Ronald Reagan do? The most unpopular political thing he could. He raised interest rates to 22%.
Yeah.
He cut back government spending. He reduced the size of government. And he restricted the money supply. And people forget the first 2 years of Ronald Reagan's administration were very painful years. But by 83, 84, 85, we were growing. By the 90s, we ushered in two decades of incredible prosperity.
It created a new word, Reaganomics.
Exactly right. And that's why we should have taken our medicine in 2008. We should have paid the price. Back then, we may have saved it, George. Now it's too late. And we're going to go through a prolonged period. Look, that period could be as long, if my math is right, as long as 40 years.
Well, you know, George Bush could have done that. He was leaving office anyway. And I mean, the TARP program originated under his administration. Why didn't he do that? He didn't have anything to lose. Why didn't he simply say, all right, we're going to do exactly, Craig, what you just said? But he didn't do it.
You know, I don't know, George, because I was very disappointed with George Bush. I voted for him both times. I think he made the very difficult decisions to protect this country. I think history will be very, very kind to George Bush as it relates to fighting the war on terror. However, when it comes to fiscal responsibility, I think George Bush made a huge mistake. He spent way too much money, and he could have made the difficult decisions. You're right. I never thought about that until you just said it. In his last 2 years, he could have said, no, we're going to bite the bullet. We're going to get through this thing as a country together.
Yep.
We are the city on a shining hill, and let's all pull together.
He wasn't going to get reelected. He was out. What a perfect time for a president to do the right thing.
It really was. Hindsight, obviously, is always 20/20, and I can't get in the man's head to understand what he was thinking. I think if you look at that whole period, or you read the books about it from the Compromised Man or some of the great books that have been written about the crisis, I really believe Hank Paulson scared the devil out of everybody. I really believe Hank Paulson, along with Timothy Geithner, convinced them the end of the world was here.
I think so too. Yeah.
And what I found very fascinating about that is, if you really want to pin some blame, who was to blame? Tim Geithner, in his charge as the president of the New York Federal Reserve, his number one job was to police the very banks that got us into trouble. And if he had been doing his job properly, those banks would not have had 30-31-to-1 ratios of leverage, and they wouldn't have been in the trouble they were in. And what did we do? Mr. Obama elects him as the Treasury Secretary. I mean, he did such a wonderful job as the president of the New York Federal Reserve in destroying the banks. He now made him in charge of the entire Treasury.
The Peter Principle, huh? Unbelievable.
It's really crazy, George. And you have to either say these are just incompetent people back east, or they're following an ideology, or maybe even more nefarious, a game plan that embraces inflation and that believes that inflation will lead us to a better world.
Well, see, that's what I think is happening. I don't think, Craig, that they're stupid people. I think they have a different agenda than we do.
Well, and I think you could be right, because, you know, most of the fellows back east are Keynesians. They believe in Lord John Maynard Keynes. And to give you a great quote from John Maynard Keynes, he said, "The power of taxation by currency depreciation, which is inflation, is one which has been inherent in the state since ancient Rome discovered it." And he's right. I mean, if you look at inflation, George, inflation has sculpted nations. It has redistributed wealth. It has created power. It's shifted power from one group to another group. And as long as we have had paper money, we have had inflation. Matter of fact, years ago, when we used to use coins, you know, made out of precious metals.
Yeah.
They used to clip the coins. They used to scratch the sides of them to take a little bit of gold out of them, a little bit of silver out of them to debase the currency. That's why we ended up putting fluting around the sides of coins so people couldn't clip the sides of the coin.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. We've always had this tendency to want to debase the currency to benefit the ruling class. Well, now that all we have to do is push a button on a computer, it's really stealing from people. Let me show you the theft, George.
Okay.
It's a very, very quiet thief. I know you have a lot of truck drivers.
Many.
Truck drivers out there on the road, George. He's working his butt off to take care of his family, and he makes $40,000 in a year. Okay?
Yep.
So he spent 1 year out on the road, working hard, eating at the greasy spoons to feed his family. Yet the government can push one button and create $40,000 at the Federal Reserve without lifting a finger other than to push the button. That is stealing from that man that gave a year's worth of his life to make $40,000.
And they do it all the time.
As we are sitting here right now, George, every time you count to three, one, two, three, we just spent $174,000 as a country.
Jeez.
Of deficit spending. We actually spent more than that. That's just the deficit spending that we do, George.
With nothing backing it up. It's fiat money. It's in the air.
Sure, and that's why people have to understand, the more of anything you create, it makes it worth less. For example, when there was only 10 big screens out there, they were expensive. My first big screen that I bought from office was $6,000.
I waited.
Okay, now there's big screens everywhere. You get it for $600.
That's right. And you throw them away when they're done.
It's really the truth. And the more of anything you create, George, if tomorrow there's a bumper crop of wheat and they have more wheat than they've ever had, the price of wheat comes down. If they have a shortage of wheat, the price of wheat goes up. And what gives money its value is its scarcity. Well, dollars are no longer scarce. We have created more dollars than God has created in seconds of time since Adam and Eve walked in the Garden of Eden, for heaven's sakes. We can't keep doing this, because when you create something out of thin air without a corresponding production or a product created, you are not helping the economy, you're hurting the economy, and ultimately you're going to kill the economy.
Craig, when we come back in a moment, I want to talk about the seven ways that you say we can escape this inflationary mess which is about to befall all of us, and we'll also take phone calls with Craig Smith, author of The Inflation Deception. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So we shall be back in a moment. If you need to email me, that's George at coasttocoastam.com.